This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
It is Sunday, May 12th, 2024, Mother's Day, and this is the hour one of the Sunday Cincinnati Inquirer. I'm Jonathan. For the headline article today, Change for the Future. Cincinnati area women are working to reverse black mother and baby death rates. Terry Domino, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. Latasha Shelton, 28 weeks pregnant and hyperventilating, shoved aside her midwife's advice to wait it out, gripped the steering wheel, and headed for the hospital, screaming. She'd spent weeks experiencing frightening symptoms. Swelling feet, swelling face, headaches, stomach pains, and hearing doctors tell her that she was overreacting. These symptoms were just first pregnancy woes. I wasn't listened to, she said. I felt like I had to be like, am I being dramatic? It let me ignore myself. Not this time. She awoke around 3 a.m. in agonizing pain, and realized she had not felt her baby move all day. A midwife suggested by phone she try some sugar, then wait an hour to see if the baby was stimulated. Shelton arrived at the emergency department with critically high blood pressure. Her platelets would not clot. Her placenta had no amniotic fluid. She had a rare syndrome called HELLP, a type of preeclampsia that causes elevated liver enzymes and low platelet counts. My organs were shutting down. Kendall Rose was delivered by cesarean section at 1 pound, 13 ounces, and her mother was stabilized. The ordeal, Shelton said, changed my life forever. I feel like this is where God called me to be. Latoya Shelton. Queen's take on black infant, mom death crisis. The U.S. medical system has a history of implicit racial bias that can include ignoring black women's pain and can lead to disparities in treatment and outcomes, including high rates of deaths of pregnancy in new black mothers and their infants. Black mothers and babies in the United States are more than twice as likely to die during pregnancy, at birth, or shortly after than white moms and infants. The crisis started in slavery times. Now, the United States has one of the highest disparities in these mortality rates in the world's developed countries. The disparities are here in Hamilton County. They stretch through Ohio and into Kentucky and across the nation. Black babies were three times more likely to die in Hamilton County in 2022, regardless of their parents' socioeconomic status or health behaviors, according to Cradle, Cincinnati. Shelton wanted change for black women. First, she became a doula, a caregiver supporting other black mothers through pregnancy and birth in 2020. Then she joined a core group of black mothers in Cincinnati who are working to turn around a centuries-long crisis in black infant deaths, and now maternal deaths. They are members of Queens Village, a team of more than 3,000 black women in the Cincinnati region. The group began in 2017 when four mothers and their children joined for dinner. They were hosted by Meredith Shockley-Smith, executive director of the nonprofit Cradle Cincinnati, a collaborative formed in 2013 to conquer Hamilton County's high black infant mortality rates. The Queens are an essential part of Cradle Cincinnati, Shockley-Smith said. They're also a partnership for each other and for other black women and their families. I feel like this is where God called me to be, Shelton said. Hospitals rated on care of black moms, babies. Black mothers were more than 2.5 times as likely to die during pregnancy, while giving birth or shortly after pregnancy, than white women in both Ohio and the United States. State and national maternity mortality records from 2014 through 2021 show. The latest rates, released May 2nd by the National Center for Health Statistics Vital Statistics System, showed a drop in maternal death rates overall, but the gap between black and white maternal death is about the same. Queens Village is working with the four major birthing hospital systems: the Christ Hospital Network, Mercy Health, TriHealth, and UC Health, to create a website, MamaCertified.org, which makes public hospital reports detailing maternal and infant health data and equity improvement plans. The hospital systems have embraced the plan, the women say. The Mama Certified website was launched in February and continues to develop its content. The effort is funded by Foundation BI3, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation, and CareSource. Accountability and trust are key, the MamaCertified.org website announces to those who visit. Together, we are working in partnership with hospitals to hold them accountable for how they care for Black people who give birth. The site rates hospitals' overall care of Black moms and their babies, including newborns, breastfeeding rates, outlines the hospital's safe sleep strategies, and community outreach programs. It shares hospital data on newborn complications and shows how each hospital's rates compare to that of county and state. The site gives hospital ratings of ally, advocate, and leader based on their care. The hospitals are asked to provide annual updates for recertification. How the Mama Certified Strategy developed. Across the country, Black moms tell story of poor or traumatic experiences at hospitals. For the Queens Village Mama Certified Advisory Board, the issue is real in their own neighborhoods. A lot of women are afraid to go to the hospital because they don't want to be dismissed, Shelton said. I've heard horror stories. The women in Queens Village who meet socially for yoga, art classes, and events designed for Black women, well-being, as well as for conversation about issues they face, started talking more about their shared experiences with pregnancy and birth about 2 years ago. Cradle Cincinnati, the health collaborative between Queen Village, joined to develop the strategy to change the outcomes. Black women told us that they wanted to be better understood on the steps of the hospitals in which they were going to. She called the effort groundbreaking. Hospital representatives applaud the effort. We are committed to ensuring that every aspect of our care meets the rigorous standards set by the program, said Dr. William Morvek, UC Medical Director of Labor and Delivery. Two of the many ways UC Health has answered the mother's request: stratifying obstetric outcomes by race and ethnicity, and holding training sessions for staff on how implicit bias affect patient care. Mia Crockett, a 38-year-old Coleraine Township mom and member of Queens Village, said the women have directed every part of the website's creation, down to its colors, its design, and the language used. Crockett believes the site will enhance trust among Cincinnati's mothers. Transparency is important for the simple fact that it provides connection, she said. A mother of five daughters, aged 6 to 15, and one son, 21, Crockett said she never had a traumatic birthing experience. Yet, repeatedly, she felt she was only at the hospital to give birth, not to receive care as a mother or a woman. It mattered, especially after she had two of her older girls. Crockett struggled with postpartum depression. Not one time did they ever ask me about my mental health, Crockett said. Now, Mama Certified lists all the hospital's postpartum maternal care services, including mental health. The women deliver personal and passionate expertise that healthcare professionals do not have, said Lauren Beresick, Director of Community Health Strategies for Health Collaborative. Efforts to improve health care for marginalized people need to include people who are most affected by the disparities, research shows. Queens Village reminds all that those closest to the problem are closest to the solution, said Katie Schrouder, president and CEO of Interact for Health, a 20-county nonprofit working for equity in health. They know their community and what will work, and they are trusted to lead. Local investment makes a national impact. Mama Certified is getting national attention, Shockley Smith said. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services invited her to Washington, D.C. in 2023 and this year on April 12th to discuss the workings happening in Cincinnati, including Mama Certified. Shockley Smith was also invited to Vice President Kamala Harris's office in 2023 to brief her on her team on Mama work. Other cities have reached out to discuss Mama Certified as an option for their communities, Cradle Cincinnati spokeswoman Jessica Seeberger said. Queen City Advisory Board members Crockett and Shelton said the website is a symbol of hope for Black mothers now and a long-range vehicle for change for mothers and baby outcomes. We are lurking for change for the future, Shelton said, not only for our generation. Shortly after the Mama Certified website was launched, one of Crockett's teenage daughters saw a billboard in their neighborhood that directs mothers to the site. She said, "Mom, look, it's Mama Certified." Later that day, she drew a picture of her daughter wearing a t-shirt with a Mama Certified logo. "Our children watch us," Crockett said, smiling. "It makes me feel good about their future." With that, that ends the first headline article. The second headline article, County Puts Team in Place for Case Review. Amber Hunt, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. In the wake of 4 months overturned homicide cases in Hamilton County, and with that, that concludes our first headline article. We'll move on to the second headline article. County Puts Team in Place for Case Review. Amber Hunt, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. In the wake of 4 overturned homicide cases in Hamilton County over the past 18 months, Prosecutor Melissa Powers announced the creation of a conviction integrity unit to evaluate wrongful conviction claims. But the effort is drawing criticism from attorneys who work on those cases. They said suspect nothing will change. And with that, that concludes the first headline article. We'll move on to the second headline article. County Puts Team in Place for Case Review. Amber Hunt, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. In the wake of 4 overturned homicide cases in Hamilton County over the past 18 months, Prosecutor Melissa Powers announced the creation of a conviction integrity unit to evaluate wrongful conviction claims. But the effort is drawing criticism from attorneys who work on those cases. They say they suspect nothing will change, a sentiment Powers herself echoed in her interview with the Inquirer. "It's not something that has just brand new started," said Powers, who sent emails in March to police chiefs throughout the county announcing the unit's formation. "It's always been part of the office. What's different about it is that there's actually a written policy." Experts in conviction integrity units, including one from a nationally renowned agency, Power said, she consulted to help craft her policy, say that Hamilton County does not adhere to the best practices. It taps longtime in-house assistant prosecutors to run it. It requires cases to have new evidence available and for new technologies to be able to retest old evidence. And applicants must waive their Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights to even apply for reconsideration. In a county battling allegations of relying on questionable informant testimony and without crucial evidence to secure potentially false convictions, announcing a conviction integrity unit could have assuaged area defense lawyers that the office was focusing on making changes. Instead, Powers made it clear that the recently overturned homicide cases had no bearing on the creation of the unit, and, as critics feared, little is changing in the way the office approaches wrongful conviction claims. It completely undermines the point of a CIU, said David Hine, who represents one of the defendants whose conviction was overturned after lengthy and ongoing court battles. They aren't trying to ensure accurate convictions and earn integrity, Hine said. They are trying to find another way to put the thumb on the scale in their favor and artificially lend the appearance of credibility to ill-gotten convictions, putting Fox in charge of the hen house. Hamilton County joins three other counties with conviction integrity units in the state: Franklin, Cuyahoga, and Summit. Such units are usually praised by wrongful conviction advocates, but Cincinnati defense lawyer Bill Gallinger said Hamilton County's unit is a political stunt. It doesn't have any of the components of a conviction integrity unit, he said. Powers said her office consulted with the Quantron Center for Fair Administration of Justice at the University of Pennsylvania Carey Law School for guidance and best practices in creating the unit. Marissa Bluestein, Quantron's assistant director, said the units are important because studies show between 2% and 6% of convictions are in error. Successful units focus on four key elements, she said: transparency, independence, flexibility, and protection from bias. Hamilton County's unit is helmed by Assistant Prosecutor Rick Gibson, who has handled countless homicide cases over his tenure with the office, a job for which he applied while still a law student in 1983. His personnel file is filled with letters of thanks from family members of victims who praise his dedication and sensitivity. The cases Gibson would be evaluating would have been prosecuted by former or current colleagues, or even by Gibson himself. One of the four recently overturned cases was originally prosecuted by Mark Pipemeyer, Gibson's former partner in helming the prosecutor's criminal division. Another contested case in which the Ohio Innocence Project is alleging that police and prosecutors withheld crucial evidence was prosecuted by Gibson. You shouldn't have lawyers who have vested interest in the cases making the decision about whether the outcome was correct, Gallinger said. Defense lawyer Jay Clark phrased it more colloquially: you shouldn't put the fox in charge of the hen house. Bluestein agreed with the approach that it's atypical. More typical would be somebody is brought in from out of state or somebody comes from another unit, like special investigations, where they are investigating corruption in the police department or in the legislative initiatives or things like that, Bluestein said. Or somebody entirely from the outside office who is a public defender or a defense counsel, or even an innocence lawyer to come in and run it. Hamilton County's unit is set to be run entirely in-house, with Gibson reviewing the applications. If he agrees the application has merit, his next step would to be either consult with the county's top prosecutor or turn to a review board in Hamilton County that would consist of other members selected from the prosecutor's office, one of whom would be from the Office of Appeals Again, Bluestein said, that's not typical. Unit review boards often include defense lawyers, victims, innocent advocates, law professors, and others. The diversity in backgrounds help ensure cases get evaluated with fresh eyes rather than only through the lens of longtime prosecutors. The focus here is not about the intentional or unethical. It has nothing to do with intentionality, Bluestein said. This is a phenomenon of implicit bias, which is unintentional and occurs without awareness, even by extraordinarily ethical, competent, and hardworking people. Critics say that Hamilton County's unit also lacks flexibility because it excludes cases with pending appeals or other post-conviction pleadings. Powers acknowledged that the unit's scope is limited because it only considers cases in which new information has become available. If it can be litigated in the courtroom, that's not what comes before us, she said. You're talking about new information that's come to light that would say somebody is truly innocent. For example, she said, if biological material was collected from a crime scene that was too small a sample for DNA testing at the time the crime occurred, the unit could agree to testing it. Now, with new technologies developed, they can get DNA off smaller and smaller samples, Powers said. But defense attorneys counter that the prosecutor's office routinely objects to DNA testing when defendants request it. In two of the recently overturned convictions, prosecutors objected to DNA testing. In both cases, the judges sided with the defense attorneys and granted new tests, the results of which did not match the defendants. Despite those results, Powers has maintained that both men are guilty and is moving ahead with retrials in both cases. Given the poor way this office is currently handling several innocent cases, I have little hope that this is anything but a cynical political move, Mark Godsey, director of the Ohio Innocence Project, said in the unit. Powers, a Republican, is up for re-election in November. She faces a Democratic challenger, Connie Pilch, a former public defender who served as state representative from 2009 through 2014. Office focus is looking for the truth. In an interview with the Inquirer, Powers downplayed the need for the unit despite having announced it on the county's website and touting it in an interview with another media outlet. She said the office has always taken allegations of wrongful convictions seriously and readied amends when prosecutors pursue the wrong suspect. When asked to point out specific cases in which prosecutors reversed their stance on a conviction, she provided details for just one case, a 1990 conviction reversal in which a serial killer confessed to a crime for which someone else had already served nearly 9 years in prison. Randall Lynn Ayers was 17 when he was arrested on suspicion of raping and shooting a 15-year-old Price Hill girl. While there was no physical evidence about Ayers, the victim identified him from a group of high school students and later testified in court that Ayers had accosted her in November 1981 at a payphone and then raped her and shot at her 3 times. One bullet hit her in the neck and another grazing her head. 9 years after the assault, Robert Minton was arrested on suspicion of killing 2 other women during separate robberies. After his arrest, Minton told police he was also responsible for the rape of the teen whose testimony got Ayers sentenced to 15 to 50 years in prison. The prosecutor's office asked that Ayers be released and his conviction vacated. Minton is still incarcerated at the London Correctional Institute. Ayers struggled after his release from prison. He died by suicide at age 41 in 2005, according to the Hamilton County Coroner Office. Our office focus is looking for the truth, searching for the truth and obtaining justice, Powers said, touting Ayers' overturned conviction. She added that the Conviction Integrity Unit is just an extension of that. Cole Beller, a longtime Cincinnati lawyer who represented Ayers after his exoneration, said the prosecutor's office played little role in the case. It's not my intention to give anybody a black eye, but it was not a matter of some organization, some police department, or law enforcement or prosecutor's office saying, hey, let's double check. It wasn't a result of that at all, Beller said. You might even say it was a miracle that the truth came out because nobody went looking for it. Powers' critics scoffed at the notion that the office could point to no other wrongful convictions in the interim. So over 40 years, they've never made a mistake, Clark said. In 40 years, they're literally batting at 1,000. I'm going to call bull on that because in 40 years, you think anyone is perfect? No, they want to believe that because to believe otherwise, to have acknowledged that the human factor of that and that they aren't infallible. Powers said that there might be other cases, but Ayers was the only one she remembered. Of the four homicide cases overturned since late 2022, prosecutors maintain that they were rightful convictions, despite judges finding flaws enough to overturn them. Prosecutors fought in each case for the convictions to either be reinstated or for the defendant to plead to a related but lesser charge. Those cases were against Marcus Sapp, convicted in 2010 of killing Andrew Cunningham. Judge Joby Lubbers overturned the conviction in January of 2023, both because of questions about police use of the jailhouse informant and allegations of violations of the Brady Rule, which requires prosecutors to disclose potentially exculpatory material to the defense. Prosecutors maintain Sapp is guilty and are moving forward with a retrial. Marty Levingston, convicted in 2008 of killing Michael Grace. Judge Wendell Cross overturned the conviction in February of 2023, again because of shaky jailhouse informant testimony and alleged Brady violations. Prosecutors agreed not to fight the order for a new trial on condition that Levingston pleaded guilty to a lesser charge. Elward Jones, convicted and sentenced to death in the 1994 beating of Rhonda Nathan, a New Jersey grandmother attacked while she stayed at a Blue Ash hotel. The conviction was overturned in late 2022 after Cross determined police and prosecutors withheld thousands of pages of investigative documents, some of which could have changed the outcome of Jones's 1995 trial and 1996 death row sentencing. Prosecutors are fighting to reinstate the conviction. Lamont Hunter, convicted and sentenced to death in 2007 of killing 3-year-old Trustin Blue. A deputy coroner changed her opinion about the nature of the injuries in Trustin's body after she reviewed evidence not initially disclosed by doctors. Hunter avoided a new trial after pleading guilty to a lesser charge of involuntary manslaughter. Godsey said that in his experience with the Ohio Innocence Project, Hamilton County prosecutors refused to consider that they could have made any mistakes. There's not an attitude of, let's try to be objective, Godsey said. For these units to work, you have somebody who hasn't been there for 20 years, who's an outsider, who's been told, you have political insulation. Powers disagreed. She said assistant prosecutors in her office thoroughly investigate cases and are confident in the defendant's guilt before moving forward with a trial. Hine, one of Jones's lawyers, said that the confidence is actually a hindrance, making it impossible for prosecutors to be open to the notion that they might occasionally err. He pointed to a sign that hangs as decoration on the prosecutor's office of each of the 5 floors it occupies in the William Howard Taft Center. It reads, "You cannot withdraw under any condition. If you do, or if you go, this line will be flanked. If you go, the enemy will sweep you up over the hillside and take the entire army from the rear. You must defend this place to the last." The quote was supposedly said to Colonel Joshua Hamble on July the 2nd, 1863, as his troops readied for the bloodshed of the Battle of Gettysburg. The attitude reflected this: we fight everything, we always defend our past work, we always take the position that a mistake hasn't been made, and we drive it to the hilt, Godsey said. In a recent filing in Jones's case, Hine included an image of the sign, which he said endorses a win-at-all-cost mindset that undermines the pursuit of truth. Powers said that the sign has no real meaning beyond suggesting that the office is the last line of defense. "It's about the safety of the community," Powers said. "This office is about making sure our community is safe. But that doesn't mean that we convict wrong people, innocent people. This office has never stood for that. We do everything we can to make sure that we are seeking the truth." And with that, that concludes that article. We'll move on to your forecast. Mother's Day will start on a chilly note, but we'll see a sunny and very pleasant afternoon. Shower chances return to the forecast by Monday evening, with rain and thunder chances lingering throughout the upcoming week. Afternoon high temperatures will remain a bit above normal. With that, we will move on to today in history. Today is Sunday, May 12th, the 133rd day of 2024. On this date in 1780, under siege for more than a month, American forces suffered their worst defeat of the Revolutionary War when they surrendered at Charleston, South Carolina, to the British. 1932. The body of toddler Charles Lindbergh Jr., son of the famous aviator, was discovered near the family's estate. He had been kidnapped from his bedroom March the 1st. And a ransom of $50,000 had been paid. Richard Humpman was later arrested and convicted of the crime, then executed. 1933. A part of President Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, the Federal Emergency Relief Administration was created to combat unemployment during the Great Depression. By the end of 1935, it had employed more than 20 million people. 1942. A German U-boat torpedoed and sank a U.S. tanker in the mouth of the Mississippi River, killing more than 24 soldiers or sailors. 1963. A relatively unknown Bob Dylan walked off the set of The Ed Sullivan Show because CBS censors objected to the song which he had planned to perform, Talking John Birch Paranoid Blues, which was critical of the ultra-conservative John Birch Society and its tendency to make claims of communist conspiracies. 1965. The uncrewed Soviet spacecraft Luna 5 crashed into the moon. It was intended to become the first craft to successfully navigate a soft landing, but a problem with a gyroscope caused the craft to lose control. 1968. Protesters began arriving in Washington, D.C. as part of the Poor People's Campaign developed by Martin Luther King Jr. and other civil rights leaders. King was assassinated a month before the event, but people came by the thousands to advocate for America's poor. The demonstration lasted 6 weeks. William Kane, USA Today Network. Now for the local buzz. Taste of Cincinnati announces Best of Taste 2024 winners. We hope you're hungry because the Taste of Cincinnati is around the corner. This week, judges sampled and rated dishes entered into the Best of Taste competition. Categories this year included restaurants, appetizers, entrees, side and desserts, food trucks, appetizer, entree, side and desserts, Finley Kitchen, appetizer and side dish, and entrees and desserts. Taste of Cincinnati returns to downtown over Memorial Day weekend, May 25th through 27th. Here are the dishes that took home the glory at the pre-event competition this year. Best of Taste 2024 Restaurant Winners. Side dish, gold. Thai Express for the mango salad. Appetizer, gold. Ali Baby Wings, silver. Kebabski Avocado Hummus, bronze. Chino's Street Food, Chino's Loaded Fries. For the entree category, gold goes to French Toast Heaven, Jerk Chicken and Grits. Silver was a two-way tie between Chino's Street Food, Marinated Chicken with Veggie Fried Rice, and Pata Roja Taquera, the Birra Taco. Bronze went to Kebabski Mediterranean Chicken Kebab Rice Bowl. In the dessert category, gold went to the Cheesecakery Bakery Oreo Cheesecake Cupcake. Silver, Pompilo's Restaurant Peanut Butter Fudge Cannoli with Milk Chocolate. And bronze, French Toast Heaven Bacon Cinnamon Toast Crunch Cereal Bar. Best of Taste Finlay Kitchen winners, appetizer and side dish, gold, Sin by Kiki Ceviche, silver, Jay's Nam and Jam Jerk Chicken Taco. For the entree category, gold went to Jay Yam and Yam Jamaican Bowl, silver, Magnificent Morsel Catering Chicken and Sausage Gumbo. For the dessert category, gold went to Banna Sun Smoothie Bar, Acai Bowl, silver, Chico's Cheesecakes, Banana Pudding Cheesecake. And for the food truck winners, for a side dish, gold went to Dine In Hawaiian for the crab bake, silver went to Adina's Beef Stroll, Mama's Meatball. Bronze, Nonstop Flavor, Jerk Chicken Cheesy Fries. In the appetizer category, gold went to Dine In Hawaiian Panko Crusted Mac. Silver, Wicked Hickory Dirty South Shot. Bronze, Mama's Creole Kitchen for the seafood nachos. In the entree category, gold went to Buffalo's Best Roast Beef on Wreck. Silver, Nonstop Flavor Brown Stewed Chicken. Bronze, Red Sesame Korean Barbecue for the Yummy Bowl. And finally, in the dessert category for food trucks, gold went to Mama's Creole Kitchen for the Bourbon Peach Beignet. Silver, Sugar Snap Sweets Salted Caramel Brownie Sundae. And bronze, CC's Empanadas for the Churros. Moving on, we have our next article. Sittenfield lawyers say no crime committed and bribery conviction. Kevin Grasha and Sharon Coolidge, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. An attorney for P.G. Sittenfield asked for a federal's appeal court on Thursday to overturn his convictions for bribery and attempted extortion, saying he didn't commit a crime. If the convictions were allowed to stand, attorney Yako Roth told a 3-judge panel during oral arguments, it could expose every elected official in the country to prosecution for accepting campaign contributions. Stentonfield, a former Cincinnati councilman, was found guilty of the charges in 2022 and sentenced last year to 16 months in prison. He's 5 months into that sentence now, but he is appealing his convictions, and the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals heard oral arguments Thursday. The roughly 40-minute hearing took place in a courtroom packed with Stentonfield supporters as well as attorneys interested in the outcome of the appeal, which partly centers on what is corrupt when it comes to a politician accepting campaign contributions. Stentonfield himself was not in the courtroom. Roth began his argument by pointing to amicus briefs filed in the 16 former federal public corruption prosecutors, as well as a bipartisan group of former attorney generals and federal judges. All of them, Roth said, are trying to tell this court that something has gone wrong. Judges question both sides. The judges, John Bush, John Nabilin, and Eric Murphy, continuously asked questions of both sides throughout. Many questions focused on whether Stentonfield's actions were sufficient to be considered crimes. The judges also asked about topics that were raised repeatedly throughout the trial and in post-trial court hearings. Some questions centered on whether there was a clear and ambiguous evidence of an exchange of money for official action, a quid pro quo. At one point, Nabilin pointed out that Stentonfield had promised to deliver the votes and get a veto-proof majority of city council to support a development project, in exchange of a $20,000 donation to his political action committee. Why couldn't the jury conclude that the evidence of corruption, he asked Roth. Roth responded that prosecutors had strung together Stentonfield's statements to make it into something it was not. Judges focused on conversation with developer. Assistant U.S. Attorney Matt Singer spent much of his 15 minutes of argument responding to questions from the judges. Two questions asked specifically about a recorded conversation between Stentonfield and a local developer, during which they talked about supporting Stentonfield's then-planned mayoral campaign. As Stentonfield and the developer, Chairman Newick, talked about campaign donations, Stentonfield said, "You don't want me to be like, hey, Chin, like, love you, but can't." Prosecutors at the trial said Stentonfield was threatening to withhold support of the project unless Dudewitt contributed. Both Roth argued that the statement wasn't sufficient evidence of a crime and said it seemed as if prosecutors had stopped focusing on it. During arguments Thursday, Nabilin asked Singer if prosecutors were running away from the love you but can't comment. Singer said the statement was one part of a corruption solicitation that involved multiple statements. It was evidence the jury could consider it, he said. What's next? A decision is not expected to come for some time, possibly not until after Stentonfield completes his prison term. Roth on Thursday asked the court to consider releasing him from prison while it considers the appeal. The judges did not indicate whether or not they would consider that. The decision impacts Stanfield's future because a felony conviction prevents him from holding public office ever again. Moving on to our next article, Cincinnati Archbishop Dennis Cincinnati Archbishop Dennis Scherner diagnosed with cancer. Dan Horn, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. Cincinnati Archbishop Dennis Scherner was diagnosed last week with bowel cancer and will soon begin a 6-month regimen of chemotherapy treatments. Scherner, the leader for more than 450,000 Catholics across 19 counties in southwest Ohio, intends to continue working while undergoing treatments, according to a statement from the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. Scherner, 75, received the stage 3 cancer diagnosis on May the 3rd after a medical procedure. Doctors said the Archbishop's health is otherwise excellent and they are optimistic his treatment will be successful, Archdiocese officials said in a statement. We ask all Catholics and people of goodwill to please keep Archbishop Scherner in their prayers, the statement said. Scherner came to Cincinnati in 2008 and took over as Archbishop about a year later, upon the retirement of former Archbishop Daniel Kizurek. He is a canon lawyer and with a background in finance and a long history of national leadership positions. He previously served as bishop in Duluth, Minnesota, and also has worked as a general secretary and treasurer with the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. At 75, Scherner has reached the mandatory retirement of age for Catholic bishops, but bishops often work beyond that age if granted permission by the Vatican. Moving on to Just Ask It. Aaron Couch, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. The Inquirer's Just Askin' series aims to answer the questions that no one seems to have an answer for, not even Google. Millions upon millions of materials await you on the shelves of the Cincinnati and Hamilton County Public Library. With 41 branches, the public library has no shortage of options for bookworms, cinephiles, and music lovers. They have plenty of books, movies, CDs, and other materials available for free. There are about 5.6 million materials at all those locations, to be more exact. How many books were borrowed last year, and which are the most popular? How many books were checked out at the Cincinnati Public Library in 2023? Library goers had a heyday with reading last year. There were just over 10.5 million books checked out in 2023. That includes print, ebooks, and audiobooks. Total library items borrowed, which includes digital, print, and AV materials, amounted to just under 18.5 million. That was up 8.38% from 2022. What were the most borrowed books of 2023? The top 10 most borrowed actual books were The Boys from Biloxi by John Grisham, Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus, Simply Lies by David Balchetti, The House of Wolves, James Patterson, Spare by Prince Harry, Duke of Sussex, Countdown by James Patterson, Mad Honey by Jody Picoult, Going Rogue by Janet Anovich, The 23rd Midnight by James Patterson, and Desert Star by Michael Conley. Do you have a question for Just Askin? Send it to us at sendlocalnews@inquirer.com. Next article, Aaron Burr stopped in Terrace Park. Conspiracy led to charges of treason. Not long ago, people knew Aaron Burr only from a funny Got Milk commercial. After Lin-Manuel Miranda's 2015 musical phenomenon, Hamilton, everyone knows of the famous duel in July 11th of 1804 between Alexander Hamilton, the brilliant founding father and first secretary of Treasury, and Burr, the damn fool that shot him. The fact Burr was the vice president of the United States at the time makes it even more intriguing. But Burr's misadventures didn't end with the duel. He spent the next 3 years traveling up and down the Ohio Valley and to New Orleans, plotting and scheming, gathering supplies and supporters with designs for some sort of expansion in the West. What exactly the plan was, no one really knows for sure, but what became known as the Burr Conspiracy resulted in him facing charges of treason. Burr's a dangerous man, not to be trusted. Even before the fateful day at Weehawken, New Jersey, when Burr shot Hamilton, the vice president was already planning his next steps. Burr was brilliant and ambitious, but not well-liked. George Washington hated him. Hamilton called Burr a dangerous man and not one to be trusted with the reins of government. Burr alienated his own party, the Democratic Republicans, during the 1800 presidential election when he and Thomas Jefferson received the same number of presidential votes. He was understood that Jefferson was to be president with Burr as vice president, but Burr didn't accede, forcing a vote in the House of Representatives to decide the election. And the Federalists hated him for killing Hamilton. So as his term as vice president came to an end in 1805, Burr turned his attention to the West, including the Louisiana Territory and the U.S. had just purchased from France. Was Burr planning treason against the U.S.? Burr could have been building up an army to illegally invade New Spain territory, specifically Texas, or to revolutionize the West and join with Louisiana to form a new republic, or to merge with the Western states and Louisiana with New Spain as a new empire, with Burr as emperor. If we had the burned and scattered letters and records back from the ashes of time, if we knew beyond doubt that everyone told the truth, we would still have a story shot through the conflicts and question marks. Historian Buckner F. Melton Jr. wrote his book, Aaron Burr, Conspiracy of Treason. No one will ever know what Burr was really up to. We do not know two of his main conspirators, James Wilkinson, who was then commanding general of the U.S. Army and secretly on the payroll as a spy for Spain, and Harmon Blennerhorst, an Irish immigrant who owned land on the Ohio River near Marietta, Ohio. Burr used the mansion on Blennerhorst's Island as a headquarters, where they stockpiled in supplies and soldiers. Today, the island is a West Virginia state park. Burr visits Cincinnati. Burr made trips to the Western country in spring of 1805 and fall of 1806. When passing through Cincinnati, he stayed at the home of Senator John Smith in Terrace Park. Elder Smith, as he is known, served as minister of the Baptist Church in the settlement of Columbia, now the Columbia-Tusculum neighborhood in Cincinnati. He was also a politician in the Northwest Territory, advocating for Ohio's statehood. In 1803, the Democratic Republican was elected as one of the state's two first senators. Smith's home in 1005 Elm Street still stands, though it's much different than the original four-room log structure. The exterior has been radically altered. The Terrace Park Building Survey reports, but the interior with its low ceilings, wide planked floorboards, and hand-blown glass panes still retains some of the original integrity. Not everyone was welcoming to Burr. Judge Jacob Burnett, a prominent Cincinnati jurist, refused to meet Burr when he came to town because he considered Colonel Burr a murderer, according to History of Cincinnati in Hamilton County, Ohio. When considering rumors swirling about Burr's plans, Senator Smith wrote to his friend in October of 1806, "We have in this quarter various reports prejudicial of your character. It is believed by many that your design is to dismember the Union. Although I do not believe you have any such design, yet I must confess from the mystery and rapidity of your movements that I have fears." Burr responded, "If there exists any design to separate the Western from Eastern states, I am totally ignorant of it. I have harbored nor expressed any such intention to anyone, nor did any person ever intimate such designs to me." His denials were basically, "I don't know what you're talking about, but I've never written or published anything saying otherwise." He had been careful, except he trusted the wrong man. He sent Wilkinson's a letter in cipher code that said he was ready to act. Burr finally committed himself in writing with details of the plan. Wilkinson turned around and spilled the beans to the government, omitting his role in the conspiracy. Kentucky U.S. Attorney Joseph Hamilton Davies brought Burr before a grand jury in Frankfort three times in late 1806 to face charges that he had planned a military expedition to invade Spanish territory, which was in violation of the Federal Neutrality Act. Burr, defended by the young attorney Henry Clay, was acquitted each time. Jefferson finally did something about that pesky Burr. In November 1806, he issued a proclamation against the Western insurgents, calling of state militias to help control the West. On December 10, 1806, the Ohio militia intercepted the boats filled with weapons, supplies, and soldiers in Blennerhassett Island, but Harmon Blenner escaped. The militia ransacked the island the next day. Burr was hundreds of miles away at the time, which was a key point. Burr went on trial in 1807 at the federal court in Richmond, Virginia, presided over by Chief Justice John Marshall. The president himself accused Burr of treason. And with that, that concludes hour one of the Sunday Cincinnati Inquirer for May 12th, 2024.